Okay, and welcome back. Another hot one in most parts of the country. Hope you're having a good day and a better evening. At least wherever you are, the evening is supposed to cool off unless you live in Las Vegas, and then it doesn't bother. I do remember that one night getting off work in August years ago and looking up at a temperature readout on top of one of the hotels, and it said 112 degrees at midnight. And I knew there was something seriously wrong with that image. So I left shortly thereafter. Went back home to Santa Barbara. Okay, we're going to do something very unusual in this first hour tonight, and something I really like doing, and that's looking behind the curtain at what really happened in history as it is commonly taught and told to the world. The book we're going to be focusing on is entitled Secret Agent 666. No joke. Aleister Crowley, British Intelligence and the Occult. And it is quite a book. Now, the author of the book is an extraordinary scholar and researcher, Dr. Richard B. Spence. He is the chair and professor of history at the University of Idaho. Let me read just a little bit about this book from the Amazon.com page, which is linked to the title of the book at Rents.com. And I would urge all of you who have an interest in history as it really played out to get this book. This is extraordinary. Aleister Crowley is best known today as a founding father of modern occultism. His wide hypnotic eyes peer at us from the cover of the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and his influence can be found everywhere in popular culture. Crowley, also known as the Great Beast, has been the subject of several biographies, some painting him as a misunderstood genius, others as a manipulative charlatan. None of them, however, have looked seriously at his career as an agent of British intelligence. Using documents gleaned from British, American, French, and Italian archives, Secret Agent 666 sensationally reveals that Aleister Crowley played a major role in the sinking of the Lusitania, a plot to overthrow the government of Spain, the thwarting of the Irish and Indian nationalist conspiracies, and, to top it off, the 1941 fabled flight of Rudolf Hess. Author Dr. Richard B. Spence argues that Crowley, in his own unconventional way, was a patriotic Englishman who endured years of public vilification, in part to mask his role as a secret agent. The verification of the Great Beast's participation in the 20th century's most astounding government plots will likely blow the minds of history buffs and occult aficionados alike. This is an amazing story. Welcome to the program, Dr. Spence.
Hi, Jeff.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for being here. You've been on documentaries seen on the History Channel and elsewhere. This book is so unique and literally does open the door to some astonishing government conspiracies. When you began researching it, did you know where you were going to go with it? Did you have any idea what you were going to unearth?
Not at all. I'll give you a little backstory. It's a book that really initially I had to be, I think, kind of prodded to write. I didn't set out to do that.
Who prodded you?
A variety of people. The way I got started was in around 1999, 2000, I was in the throes of working on a book on another bizarre character, complicated in his own way, by the name of Sidney Reilly. And Reilly was mixed up, also involved in intrigue with British intelligence and Russian revolutionary organizations, and was also in New York during World War One. And I knew that Crowley was there, too. And since I was constantly, one of the things you have to do in this is look for cross connections. You know, if two people are in the same place at the same time,
sure,
it can very well be a coincidence. It may not be, but you need to check that out.
Yes.
I decided just to make, almost casually, an inquiry to the old U.S. Army's Military Intelligence Division. And back before the FBI was really the FBI, and long before the CIA ever existed, the MID, back in the World War One era in the 1920s, was sort of the chief counterintelligence, counter-subversion organization that the U.S. government had.
Nobody knows they
collected a lot of files.
Uh-huh.
So I sent off to just see if they had anything on Crowley, and sure enough, something popped up. So
question: the MID,
yeah,
is is located where? I mean, I get the idea of this vast cavern in an ancient building with one 97-year-old clerk sitting there swatting at moths. What was it like?
Well, it's the MID, as a counterintelligence organization, basically went out of business during World War II.
Right.
And so its heyday was really from, I think it goes back, it was founded in the 1880s as a kind of general intelligence gathering agency for the Army. And the Navy, by the way, had one too, which is still around, the ONI. And Carl Yes is running with that, the Office of Naval Intelligence.
We know about ONI, yes.
Yeah. But the MID, which I think first was the Military Intelligence Bureau, and then it was named the Bureau of Military Intelligence Section, it always has MI in front, really sort of came into its own during World War One, because suddenly, you know, the Wilson administration had brought the U.S. government into the war, and population as well, and there was a great spy mania, some of which was justified, much of which wasn't. And so in 1917, the MID went into overtime, really collecting, working in tandem with what was then called the Bureau of Investigation, and also with sort of private investigative agencies. So the things like the American Protective League. These were guys, there were like 250,000 of them in the U.S. in 1918, and they carried badges saying federal agent, but they really weren't federal agents at all. And this fed into, I think, it's an interesting, one of the things to think about is the First World War, if nothing else, is really when a kind of American state security apparatus was created.
Right.
And the MID was a portion of that. Its records today, the MID records per se, are all stashed away in the National Archives.
They are in the National Archives.
In Washington,
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, they're microfilmed, and they are a fascinating source of information.
So they're accessible.
They are accessible.
Yeah.
And also they generally don't appear to be as heavily censored as things that came along later. I think you and perhaps your listeners have had, anybody's had experience recently through Freedom of Information getting files out of from the FBI.
They're not always successful, to put it mildly.
Well, you can get the files, and sometimes you can just get page after page of blacked out.
Sure, all redacted. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and
but not so with MID. You were able to get material as you requested it, pretty much.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that someone hasn't gone through. One of the things you have to assume with any kind of intelligence information is that at some point before it was declassified, someone went through it. What you hope for in cases like that, if you're a researcher like me, is you hope the person who looked through it didn't know what they were looking at.
Made a mistake, had a bad day, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, didn't understand. You know, that this is something they gave to a junior person, and sometimes they do.
And that happens. Yeah, yeah.
That's what you hope for. The file on Crowley, you know, was fairly small, and it mostly the centerpiece of it was this report from the MID in this period, because of the war, had sort of regional officers stationed around, and they would send in reports to Washington, D.C., where the headquarters was. Mm-hmm. There was a fellow by the name of, I think, Major James Ord, who was the MID regional officer at West Point, New York. And one of the things that he'd gotten reports about in the summer of 1918 was that there was this weird Englishman who had camped out on this little rocky island in the Hudson River, sort of above West Point, called Esopus Island.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the locals had reported that this fellow was, you know, painting slogans, "Do what thou wilt," with red paint on the rocks, and that he would set in a lotus position by the water for hours staring out. And, you know, this was not something that common in upstate New York.
Not back then. No.
That led Ord to sort of poke into what was going on, to do his duty and investigate. And one of the things that he came across, when he sent off for some records from New York, was that Crowley had been living in New York since 1914, and found out that he'd been closely associated with known